Welcome to another episode of the Tactical Leadership Podcast, where we focus on building better businesses. I believe in order to be the best leader that you can be, you must be willing to be the first follower and have a servant mentality when you're in a leadership position. If you want to be the best leader that you possibly can be sure to stay tuned and listen to industry leaders and hear how they built winning cultures in their own businesses.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Tactical Leadership. Today I have the pleasure of having David Fivecoat on the show, and he's a fellow veteran, a fellow Army veteran, which automatically makes him better than most of the veterans that we have on the show. And before we dive into his story on leadership, I really want to remind everybody that this show is brought to you now by Knightly Productions. If you want to create tactical content that delivers, head over to knightly.productions and see how we can help you deliver that content through all the noise. David, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, thanks, Zach. Thanks for having me. I'm really, really excited about being on here today.
Man, I'm excited to have you because it's interesting. We apparently crossed paths unintentionally here recently while I was down in Columbus, Georgia. You were actually living down there and we connected just after I left. And I really want to highlight your amazing Army career that you had, where you spent 24 years as a paratrooper. You had four combat tours. You retired as a colonel and then transitioned into the Fivecoat Consulting Group, which is a leadership consulting, training, amazing organization. We're really going to dive into, but you really have kind of shifted into your blogging, speaking, your coaching gritty leaders, and you help develop gritty organizations. And I think that's a huge piece of what we're going to hit on is the grit it takes to be an amazing leader. Besides that, tell the audience, like, tell us something special that we might not know about you from that Army career you've had.
Well, thanks, Zach. I grew up in Delaware, Ohio, which is just outside of Columbus, Ohio. So I traveled from one Columbus to another Columbus and went to West Point because I always loved military history. I majored in military history at West Point and then went out as an infantry officer, mainly in the 82nd Airborne and the 101st, and served for 24 years. Along the way, I had a lot of great opportunities and found a lot of great mentors, tried to be a good leader and tried to develop some ideas on leadership and how to develop leaderships in great organizations along the way. One thing that folks might not know about me is sort of the penultimate part of my career. I was the brigade commander for the Airborne and Ranger Training Brigade. The Airborne Ranger Training Brigade came together and from 2014 to 2016, I was the commander and we ran both Airborne School and Ranger School. Altogether, both those schools see about 25,000 students each year. Ranger School, of course, is the Army's premier small unit leadership school. And while I was the brigade commander, we had the opportunity to run the pilot program that brought the first women to attend Ranger School. 19 women came to Ranger School in April of 2015, and eventually three women earned the Ranger tab, Shay Hafer, Lisa Jester, and Kristen Grice. And all three are still out there doing great things for the Army and representing the Ranger tab extremely well.
And that's such an amazing piece of, civilians might not recognize this, but in our infantry world, RTB is like a huge thing, right? At some point you're going through something attached to that section of the world in the Army. And you're right. I mean, you see a ton of students, you've seen probably every personality type, every culture, just a wide range of people that you've had a hand in training and teaching. And you just released a book, Grow Your Grit, How to Overcome Obstacles, Thrive, and Accomplish Your Goals. And I think that really kind of is highlighted in RTB and everything you did down there is like, you have to have grit attached to accomplishing Ranger School. That's for sure. But attached to so much in the military, you have to have that grit. Is that kind of how you conceptualize your leadership style? Is it all about having that grit and teaching others and lower level leaders to have the grit to push through obstacles?
So Zach, one of the more interesting things about running Ranger School was both myself and the Brigade Sergeant Major, Kurt Arnold, and I would do the final counseling for every single Ranger student that was dropped for anything other than the first week of Ranger School. So if you failed patrols or you failed peers or you failed spots and you recycled and you weren't successful the second time, you came to see the Sergeant Major and I. And when we first started doing it, I was like, man, this I'm not sure why we're doing this, but along the way, it was an extremely enlightening leadership experience. You know, 1% of the Army that's volunteered multiple times to attend Ranger School. A lot of times they're top performers that had never failed at anything, and they come to Ranger School and they're not successful. And so we were the sort of the last people that they would see the face of Ranger School, where we could talk through it. And we really tried to develop some ideas on how they could rebound from this failure and where they had to show grit, because they failed for many of them, like I said, the first time. And so we would try to talk through, and I like to say that they were sort of, if you've ever understood the five stages of grief, which a lot of times the students were at one of those five stages, and it's denial, anger, bargaining, depression, or acceptance. And very rarely were they at acceptance, for the acceptance of why they failed, which then makes it tough to rebound and come back and be successful the next time you try Ranger School. So really, in that 15-minute counseling session, the Sergeant Major and I both tried to make sure that they understood why they failed and get them to that acceptance. And sometimes it was tough. Sometimes we weren't able to get them there. And then talk them through, hey, here's a plan for how you can rebuild yourself, you can rebound, you can build your grit, and you can come back and be successful. In that experience, you know, it feels a lot like the George Clooney character in Up in the Air, who goes around and fires everyone. You know, he flies in and fires folks, you know, because, you know, it was all these students that you want them to be successful and you want them to earn the Ranger tab. But for whatever reason, they come up short. So you help them try to build a plan to be successful and come back in there. And that shaped a lot of the things for me later, you know, later in my career. How do we develop this grit in folks? And how do we develop this sort of gritty leadership that can accomplish these long-term goals? Because they have to be able to deal with some of this adversity and setbacks and develop some resilience so that they're able to rebound and be successful.
And it's really fascinating to me, because it's one of those that I've spoken about this on the podcast recently, while I was in MCCC down on Benning, going through Captain's Career Course, right? You're learning how to lead more or less. I mean, you're about to be company commander. So you're about to have 100, 150 soldiers. You're about to have this responsibility attached to leading all these people. And one of the things, I was in the advanced writing program, and I wrote a paper about tactical leadership in the military, really feeding off of this podcast. I integrated interviews I've had with veterans such as yourself, people that have been in the military and then have seen it. I spoke to all sorts of TRADOC leaders about, you know, we're sitting here learning doctrine. And that's what it is. It's a very doctrinal thing. Ranger School is obviously a little bit different. You have the doctrine, but there's actually like the application of the doctrine into more of the art form of leadership. And one of the things that you describe your book with is that you're focusing on the science, where there is a science attached to how to be a leader, right? I feel like military doctrine does that. It dictates, here's the science attached to exactly what we want a leader to look like. But what you're talking about is actually like building the characteristics. You're talking about building the applicability of, this is what a leader looks like, but this is how to be a leader, which I think sometimes a lot of people lose in leadership, coaching, training, development, is like there's a difference between the science and the art form of it. When you're talking to these students that are going through this grief, they're going through all these emotions. Now you look over into the corporate world, a lot of the similarities when somebody meets a failure, or an entrepreneur that just can't get over that hump, or a transitioning veteran that doesn't know where to go now, and they might be going through this grief of loss of identity, loss of community. What do you kind of turn and focus to them on? You can tell them, hey, go be more gritty, but that's a science behind it. What do you focus on the art side? How do you get them to understand this is what grit looks like, and here's how you actually apply it into your leadership capabilities?
No, that's a great question. And I like how you framed it. You know, I'm definitely more into the practice and the art side of it than the science. I can talk the science stuff, but I don't think that's really as helpful. And, you know, if you want to talk the science, you can go sit in a college classroom and talk science. But let's talk about art and let's talk about where the rubber meets the road and trying to actually apply it. One of the big things that comes through with all three of those examples that you talked there is courage. And in this case, it's, you know, how do you develop courage in folks was a paratrooper, you know, jumped out of planes and experienced a lot of fear around that. I frankly did 102 jumps. I have a fear of heights. I don't really like it, but I like being around paratroopers and I like having to deal with that fear. And in this case, I like to say courage is you know, developing your ability to deal with the fear of failure. And that's a huge thing for entrepreneurs, for vets that are transitioning, and in corporate leaders as well, because it's very easy to be comfortable, right? And be in your comfort zone and not push things too much because there's not as big of an opportunity to fail. You know, you and I have both taken some huge leaps with becoming entrepreneurs. You know, that risk that you're not going to have a regular paycheck, that clients aren't going to come into the door. You know, I've experienced a lot of fear in my life, you know, from being downrange to jumping out of planes. But man, the fear of not having clients come in the door, that is a really tough emotion to deal with. And it wears on you because it's there every single day. And I went all of an entire quarter out being able to sign a client to a statement of work, and understanding that you're going to have those fears and then dealing with them. Tim Ferriss has a great concept that I like, which about listing your fears. You know, you go through and you list all the fears of everything that could possibly happen. And let's say in this case, you know, you're thinking about transitioning out of the Army to become an entrepreneur, and you're like, hey, you know, I could not have money come in the front door. I could exhaust my savings. I could do, you know, I could, you know, become a failure. And you just go through and you know, it's an exercise where you list all the failures and then you go through and go, okay, how do I deal with this? And how do I reduce the risk? You know, in many ways, it's a lot like some of the things that you do in the Army where, hey, you know, it's risk reduction. You know, hey, you know, I'm going to lose some, you know, I might lose some income. I might do this. But you go through and you list those so you have an understanding of them. And then the second big one is you've got to reframe your concept between success and it, rather than being a failure and those being the two options, it's success and this is a learning opportunity. And like we talked about before the podcast kicked off, you know, the things that you and I have had the opportunity to learn as entrepreneurs, you know, I learned how to put together a web page. I learned how to blog. I learned how to make sales, you know, all these different things. And now I'm learning how to go on podcasts and talk. All these things have pushed me and stretched me and have, you know, challenged me. And I like that challenge. That's one of those things that I'm out there. But I think the courage idea and the idea of getting your arms around your fears and understanding your fears and then developing ways to reduce that risk and then think about it as a success and learning opportunity rather than success and failure is great ways to handle that.
Yeah, I love everything you just said. And there's so many things attached to that I know will correlate with you because of the military mindset that we have, where the military, and the audience already knows because I talk about it so much, but the military loves acronyms, right? We're all about acronyms in the Army. There's an acronym literally for everything. And I've seen it, fear and fail, broken down as two different acronyms, where fear is false evidence appearing real and fail is first attempt at learning. And having that shift in mindset attached to fear isn't bad. It's just something false that you're generating, which is generally what fear is. You're jumping out of a plane, you're afraid of something, you're fearful, but it's really just false evidence of the chute not opening, or you've had 102 successful jumps, right? There's something that gets in your mind that kind of helps you convince yourself that's not the way to do, or I'm too afraid to do this. I don't want to take that action. But then the way you talked about facing those fears, making a list of them, recognizing it's something that I'm honestly working through myself in a lot of ways. And I think entrepreneurs transitioning soldiers, military folks, you have to recognize that there's a problem somewhere, right? You can't fix what you don't know is broken. You have to recognize you have a fear, and then you can take action on or decide don't take action on, your choice, right? But then there's a decision to make. How do you help people decide one way or another? Like, here's your fear. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to take action, not take action? Where do you kind of fall on that scale of things?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So for me personally, I think the thing that I do different than a lot of folks, and this is what I try to coach folks to do, is I'm willing to take that risk. I'm willing to put that toe in the water. I'm willing to try something and see if it works or see if it doesn't work. And to get folks to think through that and say, okay, we've listed all this stuff out. Now let's just try it. And it's okay. You know, we're just going to try it and we'll try it. You know, for me, the best thing that has always worked is the time piece, you know, that, hey, I'm going to stop, you know, I'm going to stay in the Army till it stops being fun. Hey, I'm going to stay as an entrepreneur for a year. And having that time frame reference and, you know, hey, you know, in your case, hey, I'm going to, you know, start the podcast for 6 months. And, it, you know, if I don't get enough, you know, kind of people that are listening to it, I'll go try something else. But I learned stuff during that process. I think having that time aspect to it and that, hey, it's just an opportunity where we try things and see if it works. I do a lot of research before I do these attempts. It's one of those things, you know, I'll read everything I can do. Like right now, I'm experimenting with Google Ads. I'd never used Google Ads before. You may have used them. I don't know if they're going to work or not, but
they're a pain in the butt. There's no easy way about it. They're a pain in the butt.
Right. But you know, I've said, hey, I need to try to figure out ways to get more eyeballs on the website because I think I'm doing good stuff. I think it can help folks, but I need more folks to see it and look at it. So I read everything I could do. I listened to podcasts and then I just tried it. And I said, hey, I'm going to try it for a month. We'll see what the, you know, I did it at the lowest level, which is $10 a day, but $305, you know, investment gets me. I track my numbers and, you know, we'll have to make a decision here coming up. This is going to be the fourth week of running Google Ads and just try to see how it went and make an assessment and see if it's worthwhile to keep doing or not.
And I like that trial and error piece and something again in the military, you know, conceptually they always talk about, you know, you get ready, you aim and then you fire. And then once you send that round's gone. Right. But I think in business and kind of like what you're talking about, I've kind of tried to shift it where it's like aim or get ready, you fire and then you aim, right? Ready, fire, aim instead of ready, aim, fire, where you shoot the shot, but you have to realize like in the world, it's not forever gone, right? There's a pivot. 2020 is a perfect example. There's a pivot that can be had no matter what you're doing. You just have to recognize the opportunity to shift that, right? But it all starts with that first step, that first toe in the water, that first leap of faith and courage, like you're talking about. Do you see that being a struggle in the veteran world where we're some of the bravest people, right? We do some of the craziest things, but there's also like a lack of vulnerability in admitting we might be afraid of the civilian world. We might be afraid of getting a job because we might not know what to do there. We might not know how to translate our experience into the civilian world. What would you say to that person? It's like, you really are afraid. You're just not admitting it to yourself. You're not seeing it and you're in denial, which means you can't make a decision not to be afraid or not be courageous anymore. What do you say to that person? Be like, hey, go do this because I have faith in you and you should have faith in yourself.
So I like the analogy of the ready, aim, fire. And I think if you continue that in a, you know, a circle, you know, it's ready, aim, fire. And then you know, with your second shot, you're reacquiring the target, you're re-aiming, and then you're firing your second shot. And that idea where, hey, I'm going to assess where the first shot went, you know, watch the tracer, and then I'll take a better shot because I've learned a little bit from that first one, and then take the second shot. With the veteran transition piece, you know, frankly, if somebody does 20 years, the first thing, I've talked to peers that have gotten out, both before I got out and now after I've gotten out. And frankly, the safety net that being a veteran has really should encourage folks to take an entrepreneurial approach to things because you have a pension. So there is a paycheck that's coming in the front door on a regular basis, and you have access to extremely cheap healthcare and dental care. And those three things really set up a nice safety net for anybody to take an entrepreneurial approach to things. I will say in my own personal experience, it did help going to work for another company as an independent contractor to just see the bridge between the military and corporate world. If you've never been in the corporate world, and the last job I had before the Army was as a busboy at a restaurant. And so I never had any experience in any sort of corporate while I was in the Army, but having that transition into a company, into another company, really set me up, I think, to see what I wanted to do with my own company. And I don't know if you saw that as you've stood up your businesses, but that to me helped me understand, okay, these are sort of the left and right limits. I understand the corporate world a little bit better. I'm not sure I could have gone out and started my own company from scratch on the day that I hung up the uniform. That's exceptionally tough. But, you know, I'm here to teach, coach, and mentor other veterans that are getting out. If they want to talk entrepreneurship, there's close to 10 blog posts on the blog of various aspects of standing up your small business. I try to share lessons learned. I'm going to write a blog post about my experience on Google Ads, my experience writing a book. All those different things become content to help others do it better and not make the same mistakes that I did. And that's sort of my approach. I don't know if that got to what you asked about trying to help veterans take that first step, but that's been what I've seen.
You know, it absolutely does. And I love a lot of what you're putting out through your content, the things you're doing with your company. And I really want to shift to start highlighting what you're doing with your business, where you have, it's almost more, we talked about the science, we talked about the art. It's almost more where, especially think about like Ranger School, it's experiential leadership, where you're experiencing things and you're helping people experience different forms of leadership through your journey, through their own journey, and highlighting those things. One of the things you do through your organization is a Currahee Mountain Leadership Experience. Again, experiential leadership, where you're taking people into the North Georgia Mountains, you're going through a process with them. Talk to us about, you know, what your thought is on that type of leadership and teaching that type of leadership, but also like what people are learning through these experiences that you're helping people go through and learn.
Yeah, the Currahee Mountain leadership experience leverages Currahee Mountain, which is the mountain next to Camp Tocoa, Georgia. Camp Tocoa, Georgia was a World War II training camp. Four different airborne regiments rotated through that camp for their training. And of course, the most famous was the 506 Parachute Infantry Regiment, which was the parent organization of Easy Company 506 PIR, the famous Band of Brothers. Easy Company has become the most famous rifle company in the European theater of operations during World War II, but they did their training there at Tocoa, Georgia. If you've seen the HBO miniseries or read the book by Stephen Ambrose or the other 14 books that are out there on Easy Company, there's a lot of information about what Easy Company went through. But one of the things that they did to train themselves and toughen themselves up was to do this run up Currahee Mountain and back down. And it was the famous 3 miles up, 3 miles down. We use that same route as a way to push folks out of their leadership comfort zone, expose different folks to being leaders and followers, and put them in different scenarios, which push them a little bit farther. This idea of getting you out of your comfort zone and experiencing and actually doing leadership is the best way that we've found that people learn and try new things. And we're there as the safety net to make sure that it's done safely, that folks all have an opportunity to lead. We do a short after action review after each leader has an opportunity to lead the group for a little while. So they get dedicated feedback on their leadership. We do a 360 evaluation at the end of the day's exercise. And then the next day, each team member that came through the exercise gets one-on-one coaching from myself or one of the other veteran coaches that we have that helps out at Currahee Mountain. But it's really a great program. You see a lot of growth and development. You see sometimes where the junior leader is leading the CEO. And in that case, you know, they have to work on their style. The CEO has to tone it down and not be the leader, because at that point in time, they're the follower. And we give them some different scenarios just to stretch them a little bit and put them into different things so they get an opportunity to try new things, try some leadership techniques, and develop as a leader.
Man, I absolutely love that, because that's a value attached to military training that the civilian world doesn't generally get to see, where sometimes to be the best leader, and this is Dale Carnegie-ism that I've taken from when I used to teach Dale Carnegie, but sometimes to be the best leader, you have to be the first follower. There are guys going through Ranger School that are captains to have to follow an E4, a specialist, because it's his turn to lead, right? And sometimes you have to take that ego check of, I've been in the military for 10 years and I way outrank this dude, but I'm going to have to take that humility and say, this kid, he probably has more practical experience recently than I do attached to accomplishing this mission. So by doing that with the organizations that you're working with and having this experience, I absolutely love that, because that is a very hard lesson for, if you've been a CEO for 30 years, it's hard for you to maintain that humility attached to, maybe I need to follow because I don't understand social media. Maybe I don't understand the millennial or Gen Z generation that's coming out. Maybe I need somebody on that level to teach me something new while you also teach them that mentor-mentee relationship that's very fluid back and forth. And it sounds like that's really what you're developing through this organization of yours.
Right. The humility of being a good follower. You know, every leader, even all the way up to the president of the United States, has to be a follower at some point in time, because somebody, you know, in the case of the president, you know, of course, you know, the voter speaks and they're accountable to the voters, they're accountable to Congress. And in some ways, they're going to be a follower. Same way the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Milley, he becomes a follower at some point in time when he's sitting in those cabinet meetings where they're trying to develop a strategy for the nation. He becomes a follower, he becomes part of a team. And great leaders have that ability to be able to shift from being the leader to being a follower. CEOs, same way, you know, they end up having to be followers when it comes to the board. And they have to report out to the board and make sure that they're accountable to the board and the stockholders and also the media. So developing this idea where you develop your skills as both a follower and a leader really creates a much better leader. But it does take some work and some humility on these folks that are willing to bring their group to North Georgia, get a little bit out of their comfort zone, you know, sweat a little bit, work a little bit, and you know, develop into better followers and better leaders than when they showed up. It's a little bit different than your normal, you know, go golfing for a corporate retreat and talk a little bit of strategy, but it really has an incredible amount of impact on a group. And can set them up to really take it to the next level as leaders and followers.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I love that you're applying that lesson from your battlefield into the boardroom. And I think that's such a phenomenal way for team building. It's just the civilian world just doesn't see it the way we see it. And it is so awesome to be able to translate that for organizations. And going from the military and the 24 years of service and the 4 combat tours, and now taking that into the private sector where you're sharing that knowledge, sharing that experience, and you're just helping other people recognize what good leadership and great leadership really looks like. What is the end goal for you? What is the legacy you're wanting to leave on the world with all the amazing things you have done and you are still accomplishing?
Started down this road, like a lot of things that I've done, without the end state in mind. You know, went to West Point with an idea of, hey, I'll do 5 years in the military and then, you know, I'll see what's happening. Started this company on this idea of, hey, I could help folks. And that's really where it started out. That's the legacy where, you know, from the blog to the book, to the in-person leadership training, you know, the opportunity to work with good corporate leaders and make them great, or great corporate leaders and make them fantastic, really is the thing that drives me. That's the legacy. That's where I want to have the impact. That when I, as I'm sure you have it happen to you too, you know, you do a blog post or a podcast and you think it's great and it, you know, it gets 20 views or 20 likes and you're like, oh, man, I don't know if I'm cut out for this, you know, this isn't working, you know, I need to go do something else. And so when I have those moments of doubt, and those times when I'm like, oh man, you know, I always take a step back and say, okay, you know, it impacted 20 people. It helped those 20 people. They found it useful. Don't do that kind of article again, because that isn't as valuable as you think it is. But for me, that's the impact and legacy. Just, you know, as you've seen from the blog, I try to share lessons learned that I've learned from standing up this company. I try to be as clear and transparent as possible. I picked that up from another blogger, a woman that does Squarespace design, because that was one of the first things I needed to learn, which was how to design my own website. And so I started following her, and she's super transparent. You know, she shares, you know, how much a course made, how much this did and that did. And I was like, huh, that's really, you know, that's awesome that she's sharing it, because it gives me an idea of what to expect, what to think through. And so I've tried to do the same thing, try to help folks out by doing that and sharing and helping to build better leaders.
David, I absolutely love it. I mean, it's such an amazing thing you're translating, because it's so difficult for us sometimes to do. So I appreciate you bringing that wisdom, that knowledge from your service into the world and continuing that path, because you've obviously done so many amazing things in the military. And I want to give the audience an opportunity. What would be the best way for them, of course, to find the blog, find you, connect with you? Where's the best spot for them to get a hold of you?
Yeah. So, the first place to start, of course, is the website, and that's www.thefivecodeconsultinggroup.com. I'm also on LinkedIn. Someone early on said, hey, you should only focus on one platform for an entire year. And so I decided to focus on LinkedIn. So you can find me, both the company TFCG and myself are both on LinkedIn. That's where I do links to the blog as well on LinkedIn. So you'll always see the blog post come up on Mondays and Thursdays there, or you can join the email list at the actual blog post. But two main places, LinkedIn and the blog, www.thefivecodeconsultinggroup.com.
Awesome. I'll make sure those are in the show notes. Be sure to head over, check out David, check out everything he's working on with this consulting group and all the knowledge he's bringing into the world. And of course, he'll be back this Friday for Tactical Friday to share these action steps attached to creating this type of leader in the world. David, thank you so much for your time, my friend.
Thanks, Zach. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Tactical Leadership Podcast, and I hope you got a ton of value out of what we talked about today. I also want to remind you that this show is brought to you by Knight Protection Services. If you're a leader in a small to mid-sized business that does $5 to $10 million a year in revenue and want to improve retention costs, which could actually add up to being twice your employee's salary, all through creating a safer work environment and saving up to 25% in insurance costs, be sure to visit knightprotectionllc.com.